Chapter 30. You are doing wrong. It is not proper in you to throw me over like this. I have a little matter to remind you of, which you seem to forget. She sank into a chair and turned pale. I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear it. She said through her hands, as he, standing close to the edge of her gown, began to allude to the Jersey days. But you ought to hear it, said he. It came to nothing, and through you. Then why not leave me the freedom that I gained with such sorrow? Had I found that you proposed to marry me for pure love, I might have felt bound now. But I soon learned that you had planned it out of mere charity, almost as an unpleasant duty, because I had nursed you, and compromised myself, and you thought you must repay me. After that I did not care for you so deeply as before. Why did you come here to find me, then? I thought I ought to marry you for conscience' sake, since you were free, even though I did not like you so well. And why then don't you think so now? She was silent. It was only too obvious that conscience had ruled well enough till new love had intervened and usurped that rule. In feeling this, she herself forgot for the moment her partially justifying argument that having discovered Henchard's infirmities of temper, she had some excuse for not risking her happiness in his hands after once escaping them. The only thing she could say was, I was a poor girl then, and now my circumstances have altered, so I am hardly the same person. That's true, and it makes the case awkward for me. But I don't want to touch your money. I am quite willing that every penny of your property shall remain to your personal use. Besides, that argument has nothing in it. The man you are thinking of is no better than I. If you were as good as he, you would leave me, she cried passionately. This unluckily aroused Henchard. Who cannot in honor refuse me, he said. And unless you give me your promise this very night to be my wife, before a witness, I'll reveal our intimacy in common fairness to other men. A look of resignation settled upon her. Henchard saw its bitterness, and had Lucetta's heart been given to any other man in the world than Farfrae, he would probably have had pity upon her at that moment. But the supplanter was the upstart, as Henchard called him, who had mounted into prominence upon his shoulders, and he could bring himself to show no mercy. Without another word she rang the bell, and directed that Elizabeth Jane should be fetched from her room. The latter appeared, surprised in the midst of her lucubrations. As soon as she saw Henchard she went across to him dutifully. Elizabeth Jane, he said, taking her hand, I want you to hear this. And turning to Lucetta Colin, will you, or will you not, marry me? If you wish it, I must agree. You say yes? I do. No sooner had she given the promise than she fell back in a fainting state. What dreadful thing drives her to say this, Father, when it is such a pain to her? Asked Elizabeth, kneeling down by Lucetta. Aunt, compel her to do anything against her will. I have lived with her, and know that she cannot bear much. Don't be a northern simpleton, said Henchard dryly. His promise will leave him free for you, if you want him, won't it? At this Lucetta seemed to wake from her swoon with a start. Him? Who are you talking about? She said wildly. Nobody, as far as I am concerned, said Elizabeth firmly. Oh well, then it is my mistake, said Henchard. But the business is between me and Miss Templeman. She agrees to be my wife. But don't dwell on it just now, entreated Elizabeth, holding Lucetta's hand. I don't wish to, if she promises, said Henchard. I have, groaned Lucetta, her limbs hanging like fluid, from very misery and faintness. Itchel, please don't argue it any more. I will not, he said. And taking up his hat he went away. Elizabeth Jane continued to kneel by Lucetta. Hat is this? She said. Who called my father Michael, as if you knew him well? And how is it he has got this power over you, that you promised to marry him against your will? Ah, you have many, many secrets from me. Perhaps you have some from me, Lucetta murmured with closed eyes, little thinking, however, so unsuspicious was she, that the secret of Elizabeth's heart concerned the young man who had caused this damage to her own. "I would not do anything against you at all," stammered Elizabeth, keeping in all signs of emotion till she was ready to burst. "Cannot understand how my father can command you so. I don't sympathize with him in it at all. I'll go to him, and ask him to release you."
"No, no," said Lucetta. "Let it all be."
28. The next morning Henchard went to the town hall below Lucetta's house, to attend petty sessions, being still a magistrate for the year by virtue of his late position as mayor. In passing he looked up at her windows, but nothing of her was to be seen. Henchard, as a justice of the peace, may at first seem to be an even greater incongruity than Shallow and Silence themselves. But his rough and ready perceptions, his sledgehammer directness, had often served him better than nice legal knowledge in dispatching such simple business as fell to his hands in this court. Today Dr. Chalkfield, the mayor for the year, being absent, the corn merchant took the big chair, his eyes still abstractedly stretching out of the window to the Ashler front of High Plus Hall. There was one case only, and the offender stood before him. She was an old woman of mottled countenance, attired in a shawl of that nameless tertiary hue which comes, but cannot be made a hue neither tawny, russet, hazel, nor ash. A sticky black bonnet, that seemed to have been worn in the country of the psalmist, where the clouds drop fatness, and an apron, that had been white in time so comparatively recent as still, to contrast visibly with the rest of her clothes. The steeped aspect of the woman as a whole showed her to be no native of the countryside, or even of a country town. She looked cursorily at Henchard and the second magistrate, and Henchard looked at her, with a momentary pause, as if as he had reminded him indistinctly of somebody or something which passed from his mind as quickly as it had come.
"Well, and what has she been doing?" he said, looking down at the charge sheet.
"She is charged, sir, with the offense of disorderly female and nuisance," whispered Stubbard.
"Where did she do that?"
said the other magistrate.
"By the church, sir, of all the horrible places in the world. I caught her in the act, your worship."
"Stand back then," said Henchard, "and let's hear what you've got to say." Stubbard was sworn in, the magistrate's clerk dipped his pen, Henchard being no note-taker himself, and the constable began. "Hearing a illegal noise, I went down the street at 11:25 p.m. on the night of the 5th instinct, Anno Domini. When I had—"
"Don't go so fast, Stubbard," said the clerk.
The constable waited, with his eyes on the clerk's pen, till the latter stopped scratching and said,
"Yes."
Stubbard continued, "When I had proceeded to the spot, I saw defendant at another spot, namely, the gutter." He paused, watching the point of the clerk's pen again.
"Gutter, yes, Stubbard.
Spot measuring 12 feet 9 inches, or thereabouts from where I—" Still careful not to outrun the clerk's penmanship, Stubbard pulled up again, for having got his evidence by heart it was immaterial to him whereabouts he broke off.
"I object to that," spoke up the old woman.
"Spot measuring 12 feet 9 or thereabouts from where I—" apostrophe is not sound testimony. The magistrates consulted, and the second one said, that the bench was of opinion, that 12 feet 9 inches from a man on his oath was admissible. Stubbard, with a suppressed gaze of victorious rectitude at the old woman, continued, "Was standing myself. She was wambling about quite dangerous to the thoroughfare, and when I approached to draw near she committed the nuisance, and insulted me."
"Insulted me?"
Apostrophe, yes, what did she say?
"She said, 'Put away that D lantern, apostrophe she says.'"
"Yes."
"Says she, 'Dost hear, old termit head? Put away that D lantern. I have floored fellows a D sight finer looking than a D fool like thee, you son of a B, D me if I ain't, apostrophe she says.'"
"I object to that conversation," interposed the old woman. "I was not capable enough to hear what I said, and what is said out of my hearing is not evidence.
There was another stoppage for consultation. A book was referred to, and finally Stubberg was allowed to go on again. The truth was that the old woman had appeared in court so many more times than the magistrates themselves that they were obliged to keep a sharp lookout upon their procedure. However, when Stubberg had rambled on a little further, Henchard broke out impatiently, "Come, we don't want to hear any more of them custies and bees. Say the words out like a man, and don't be so modest, Stubberg, or else leave it alone." Turning to the woman, "Now then, have you any questions to ask him, or anything to say?" "Yes," she replied with a twinkle in her eye, and the clerk dipped his pen. 20 years ago or thereabout I was selling of furmity in the tent at Wagdon Fair, 20 years ago, well, that's beginning at the beginning. Suppose you go back to the creation," said the clerk, not without satire. But Henchard stared, and quite forgot what was evidence, and what was not. "A man and a woman with a little child came into my tent," the woman continued. "He sat down, and had a basin apiece. Ah, Lord's my life! I was of a more respectable station in the world then than I am now, being a land smuggler in the large way of business, and I used to season my furmity with rum for them who asked for it. I did it for the man, and then he had more and more, till at last he quarreled with his wife, and offered to sell her to the highest bidder. A sailor came in and bid 5 guineas, and paid the money, and led her away. And the man who sold his wife in that fashion is the man sitting there in the great big chair." The speaker concluded by nodding her head at Henchard and folding her arms. Everybody looked at Henchard. His face seemed strange, and intent, as if it had been powdered over with ashes. "He don't want to hear your life and adventures," said the second magistrate sharply, filling the pause which followed. "You've been asked if you've anything to say bearing on the case. That bears on the case. It proves that he's no better than I, and has no right to sit there in judgment upon me." "'Tis a concocted story," said the clerk. "Oh, hold your tongue." "No, 'tis true." The words came from Henchard. "'Tis as true as the light," he said slowly. "And upon my soul it does prove that I'm no better than she. And to keep out of any temptation, to treat her hard for her revenge, I'll leave her to you." The sensation in the court was indescribably great. Henchard left the chair, and came out, passing through a group of people on the steps and outside that was much larger than usual, for it seemed that the old furmity dealer had mysteriously hinted to the denizens of the lane in which S. he had been lodging since her arrival, that she knew a queer thing or two about their great local man Mr. Henchard, if she chose to tell it. This had brought them hither. "Why are there so many idlers round the town hall today?" said Lucetta to her servant, when the case was over. S. he had risen late, and had just looked out of the window. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.